I'm Dr. Gary Linkov. I'm a facial plastic surgeon and a hair restoration surgeon. I'm located on 60th and Madison. The name of my practice is City Facial Plastics, and the website cityfacialplastics.com. And my Instagram handle is @dr for doctor Gary NYC.
I'm curious how long you've been in practice, and also if you've seen any changes that have been happening of late.
I've been in practice for approximately 7 to 8 years now, going on 8 years. You know, my whole mission, Pat, is to restore people's confidence, and I have a way of doing that, but that's really the overall mission of what I do. There are a lot of changes that are going on in facial plastics and both and in hair restoration as well. With the face aging, there are a lot of new theories on why that happens, how that happens, and what we can do to reverse it. Some of the surgeries we used to do are in many ways antiquated. So that's one of the disadvantages of going to see someone who's been in practice for 30 years and hasn't updated their techniques, because, you know, we are learning that the techniques of old have sometimes resulted in very exaggerated appearances that don't really give you that rejuvenated, youthful, natural look. You have these new injectables that people are putting into their face. And that is also in many ways being overdone. We're overshooting on how much correction we're giving people for various reasons. I think most of it stems from a lack of knowledge of the anatomy of the face, but also, you know, there's of course human greed involved and the like. So we're seeing the outcomes of that type of work, and people are looking, you know, very fake and unnatural. And unfortunately, you know, they go in with this anticipation that they're going to get something great, and then many people are left disappointed, and then they completely shy away from any type of you know, future sort of interventions or slight improvements that can help them feel good about themselves. So I think as we're progressing in, especially in facial aesthetics, we're starting, hopefully, I mean, as a kind of a global community, especially on the scientific front, to really understand what makes a youthful face and what makes a face look natural. And hopefully we can distill that knowledge down to everyone who's involved in treating the face so that the overall results start to improve. Because that, you know, that's one of the big things. There's more of it being done, but we need to do it in a good way so that people can look and feel their best.
Do you ever worry about people going under the knife for the wrong reasons?
You're absolutely right. Honestly, when someone walks into my office and I start chatting with them, the number one thing in my mind is not, you know, can I convince them to get a procedure? Can I, and all those things are way in the background. Number one thing is, can I make this person happy? If I can answer that question with a yes, then I'm willing to take them on for a procedure if, you know, if we see kind of eye to eye on what we plan on doing. There are many people, like you said, who, you know, they're doing it for the wrong reasons. They just had a divorce. They're hoping that it will help them get some new job or, you know, something that is related to a life event where, you know, it changing something about their face may not really help them land that new job. And so you don't want to give them that type of promise. So figuring out what it is that they're looking for, why it's bothering them, is extremely important. Because if I feel like I can't make them happy, no matter how willing they are to pay and sign up for a procedure, I'm not going to do it. So that's always the question that's running through my mind. Because yes, you have a cohort of people. Some are addicted to surgery. Some, you know, again, are doing it with some faulty expectations. So that is extremely important. And I think in the line of work that my undergrad was in psychology, actually, and I think in the line of work that I do, you almost have to be, you have to play psychologist pretty much all the time, whether it's before the procedure, you know, making sure you're picking the right candidate for the right procedure, but also afterwards, right? Because then they went in trying to look more beautiful, and then they have weeks of recovery, and they look bruised and swollen, and many people can get depressed. So being able to properly guide someone through surgeries, I always tell people who are looking to get, you know, something done, you know, not just with me, with anyone, that they need to find someone, not just who's technically good, but who's who's going to be there to kind of guide them through the process. Because, you know, it's if it is surgery, then there's always some risk of complications. Even non-surgical, modalities have risks. And if you are one of the unlucky people who has a problem, you want a doctor and a provider who's really going to be there to guide you through the recovery.
Do you ever turn people away, I can't help you kind of thing?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And sometimes I'll send them to a colleague when I truly believe that someone else has a unique expertise in the type of problem they're coming to me with. Or if I think that they're just not a surgical candidate by any means, I don't want to send them to a colleague because then that reflects poorly on me if I'm sending someone who I think should get something done. And then my colleague's like, why did you send me this person? So, I turn them away sometimes with a good alternative, and other times just giving them my honest expert opinion that I don't think that they'll benefit from something, you know, that maybe they thought they would benefit from. Mm-hmm. Usually there's something else to offer them, but honestly, in this day of Instagram and many people presenting who are younger, sometimes the best answer is just, you know, to tell them like they just don't need that. And maybe it was because they were taking their photos a little too close with their phones, which can magnify different parts of the face. No, it's a very real thing. It zooms in on features of the face, and then, you know, that's how they're used to seeing themselves, you know, and the reality is that the aesthetic proportions may be totally appropriate. I have patients who worry about, you know, half a millimeter of asymmetry of their lips. They're seeing me because I actually care about that problem. But, you know, I also tell them that that can be very tricky to fix because our faces are all asymmetric. Yeah. And adjusting for that, you know, in a perfect way with surgery is often not something that's realistic. And so, you know, even if we try, we may not completely succeed. And sometimes it is helpful to kind of remind them that there are a lot worse things in the world. But then again, you know, in my line of work, that's also why people come to me, because, you know, those are the types of things I actually address or try to anyway.
A lip lift. I hadn't heard of a lip lift. What is it? It sounds sort of painful.
I've been doing a lot of lip lifts lately, and Real Self, I don't know if you've heard of Real Self. It's one of it's pretty much the premier website for where people go to find a cosmetic provider, whether it's for something like a laser or, you know, a tummy tuck or, you know, mommy makeover, whatever it is, but people go to Real Self. And so Real Self made me sort of their primary medical reviewer for the lip lift category. And so it's because I've been doing more of these procedures and answering a lot of people's questions. So it's something I have a big passion for. So a lip lift is essentially an incision under the nose, and it's we remove a portion of the skin, and it's made to reposition the upper lip, creating more harmony with the rest of the face, exposing more of the upper teeth, reversing some of the signs of aging. So people get facelifts, and, you know, that's fairly accepted. But, you know, the upper lip also droops with age. And some of my younger patients are born with a long, what's called philtrum, that portion from the bottom of your nose to your upper lip. That philtrum can, you know, gives a certain look. And some people try to cover it up with filler injections or with makeup, you know, and surgery is a more permanent way of addressing that. So it's not a painful procedure. I mean, it's done, you're wide awake, you get numbing shots, just like at the dentist, takes about an hour and a half. And, you know, there's a bit of a recovery period, of course, get some bruising, swelling, stitches are removed at day 5. And you start to see your results pretty much at about a week. And then it continues to improve from there. There is a scar underneath the nose, but it's kind of hidden in that shadow that forms at the base of the nose. And of course, you know, with the proper technique, it can be minimized. But, you know, there's still something that if someone looked really closely, they could see. So it's not to be taken lightly, but it's a great, not just alternative to fillers, but it accomplishes things that fillers can't. So filler extends the lip forward. It kind of gives a very artificial sort of duck-like look. It also covers up the upper teeth. In a more youthful, sensual face and mouth area, those upper teeth, especially, I mean, if they're well taken care of, should be more exposed. Obviously you have to be able to close your mouth, but then when you keep your mouth slightly open or you're conversing, having some of those upper teeth showing is a nice trait. And so the surgery does just that, and that's one of its main goals. So, I mean, on my website, you can see many examples of people who've had it done. My young patients, old patients, I mean, the satisfaction rates are extremely high. But again, I'm picking people who can tolerate the entire process. If someone tells me, I don't want a scar on my face, then they're not a candidate for surgery. If they tell me that, they want that area, that philtrum area shorter, but they don't want to expose more teeth, then they're not a candidate for surgery. So I don't pick the people who I think won't be happy, going back to my prior point. You have to pick, the right candidates. It's not just about doing more surgery or just doing the same surgery on everyone. And also understanding people's goals. I've started doing the surgery for men. I have men who are also interested because they feel like their lip kind of makes them look a little angrier. It gets heavier over time. So they're also noticing this change with age. And so we can reposition, a male lip as well. So there are lots of, and also for some of my transgender patients, in many ways, it can be a feminizing type of procedure. So I have people who come in from other countries even for specifically that procedure to kind of augment their appearance for whatever they're, going for.
Don't lips get thinner usually as we age? And would that have any effect on the surgery going forward?
Yes. So the lip does thin out. So one of the other consequences, good consequences of this procedure is that you increase the amount of red lip that's showing. So just like when people get the filler, their lip looks fuller. So the surgery does that. But again, in a more permanent way, of course we age. So whether you get any kind of aging face procedure, ultimately there will be some give, some drop over time. So yes, that happens. It happens to, varying degrees depending on the individual, depending on how far out you're looking. Mm-hmm. So yes, it will change with time. Any surgery does, because the body continues to age, but it still has a lot of permanence in its, in its effect.
I was reading about your connection with Memorial Sloan Kettering. Why did you choose plastic surgery?
Initially chose head and neck surgery. So my core specialty is head and neck surgery. And I really love the anatomy of the head and neck. It's very complicated. There are a lot of nerves, blood vessels. It's very three-dimensional. It's something that when you learn it in school from a textbook, even in the cadaver course, you don't really get a full appreciation for all the different layers of the anatomy. And only really once you're in surgery do you really start to see what you've been trying to understand. And so that's what kind of drew me to the face. And I love always the connection with the senses, kind of how we interact with the world. So that was my initial sort of to kind of go into that core specialty. Beyond that, I mean, I've always had an interest in art and painting and sculpture. So I was basically able to kind of marry those interests in artistic sort of assessment of different things with my interest in working with my hands, with surgery, with the anatomy of the head and neck in facial plastics. And so that's why I chose it. I love the challenge of, I don't only do cosmetic work, I do reconstructive work as well. I work at the Brooklyn VA with veterans. So I do their facial reconstruction. So when people ask me like, oh, you just do cosmetic, to me, honestly, they're in many ways one and the same, reconstruction and cosmetic. Whether the reason for the procedure is completely elective because someone just chooses to change slightly the way they look to feel better about themselves, or they had a trauma, when I'm actually doing a procedure, I'm always thinking about both cosmetic and reconstructive. Yeah. So to me, they're not so separate. The insurance companies love to kind of tease those apart because they don't want to pay for the cosmetic work. But in reality, when you're actually doing the work, I'm not separating those at all. That's kind of an important point that I think a lot of times gets missed. But yeah, I mean, I love being able to look at a problem, especially when I have a reconstructive case where there's, like, say, a hole in the face, and I'm trying to think of different ways of closing that hole in the best way possible. And you have to take into consideration so many different variables to come up with the best solution. It's not just, you know, how can you make it look great, because every type of procedure has a different type of recovery associated with it. Mm-hmm. So I have to take into consideration the person's underlying medical conditions, their tolerance for a longer recovery potentially, because I might be able to do something that makes them look really good like 6 months from now, but it's going to take more work in the recovery phase in the first, say, few months. And wow. For some of my patients, that's not an option. I mean, they yeah. need the quickest possible recovery because yeah. they may be bedridden. They may be, you know, so there's all types of variables, and being able to kind of synthesize all of that and come up with the best strategy is super interesting and really kind of gets my creative juices flowing.
Well, probably the variety of what you do is keeps you going as well. I would think not only your plastic surgery business, but going over to the VA and all of that.
And I do hair too. So that's,
yeah, you said.
And that's a whole other world. I mean, hair, I mean, in many ways, it does work hand in hand with facial plastics. A lot of the procedures can be combined. I'm doing not just, you know, the plugs, as people like to say, but also hairline lowering procedures. Yeah. So there's all types of surgical procedures that can be done with hair. And it's not just kind of moving the hairs around, which is what people kind of, I think, imagine yeah. it to be. There's also a lot of innovation in that world, too. So being on the you know, cutting edge of hair is also super interesting. With our current techniques, we're able to do hair transplants into the eyebrows, the beard area. We take hairs from the neck, the back, the chest. So it's not like your traditional, like, oh, we're going to take a strip of a hair from the back of the head.
Yeah.
And move it to the front. And we're working on women almost now as often as we are on men,
wow.
you know, because
okay.
female hair loss has been, I think, underappreciated for a very long time. And so now I'm seeing a lot of women come to the office, sometimes just for a consultation to just discuss why is my hair falling out. And not just women in their 60s and 70s, but, you know, women in their 20s and 30s who are having hair loss.
Yeah.
And again, it's they're wearing the, you know, the extensions and wigs and pieces, and they just don't want to talk about it other than when they come to my office.
You look at faces and you can tell so much about the life a person has lived. And when you go tweaking that a little bit, maybe it will make it better, but it's not what was there to begin with. You know what I mean?
I think there's a line I heard once, forgot who said it originally, but that every line on the face tells a story. And I think that that's extremely interesting. So I'm not the kind of surgeon that goes around and tells people, oh, you need to get this done, you need to get that done.
I can fix that.
Right.
I can fix that point to your nose.
Right. So, like, you know, and people sometimes turn it on me. They're like, well, what about you? You know, you have this, you have that. And I'm like, yeah, like, I can look in the mirror and acknowledge certain, you know, quote unquote flaws of my face. But the truth is that it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
You know, maybe one day it will, and maybe then I'll have it addressed. So my whole thing is that if people can go on living the way that they are, and they're totally confident in their appearance, in the way they feel and look, whether they're 20 or 80, then more power to them. They don't need to come see me. I mean, I would love to come and just sit down and have a coffee with them, because those are very positive, you know, probably optimistic, people who have it sort of all together. I mean, patients who are coming to me, there's something that's lacking in their self-esteem and their confidence.
Yeah.
And whether that's something that formed because of the way they've aged or something that they were born with, right? Like a very, you know, crooked or hooked nose that they've just had their whole life that people have made fun of them for, or they feel like that's holding them back in their careers. I mean, most of my patients are very normal and you know, kind of extreme professionals, and they just have that one thing that has been bugging them. Yeah, exactly. So they're coming to me already with that type of concern. But sometimes that concern has developed over time. So I'm there to kind of help walk them through the process, do it safely. I mean, the number one thing in my mind is, how do I do this in a very safe way? Mm-hmm. I want to get results. I want this to be effective, right? They're paying me. I want to make them happy and make sure that they're not wasting their time and money. But at the end of the day, you know, as a physician, it's always do no harm, right? Yeah. So that's the number one thing that's kind of guiding my overall approach. And I think many of my patients are very happy with that. They know that I'm not just going to do something because they read it in, you know, they saw it online and they wanted me to try it on them. I mean, it's, again, most of my patients are coming in with a concern, and, you know, we're working together to address that concern. So yes, sometimes we wipe away certain lines and that reverses, you know, maybe how they look, but that's what they want,
yeah,
you know, and
I
not everybody wants that for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
None of this stuff is for everyone. You know, there are plenty of people who just aren't good candidates just based on solely by appearance, but they've heard of the procedure and they want to know, you know,
yeah,
is this right for me? And that's fine. And then some of my patients, they might look great with it, but they're not willing to kind of go through the entire
sure
surgical process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine too. So for me, I love educating. I love just giving people all the information. And then I can't make the ultimate decision for them, whether it makes sense with
yeah
their life and, you know, where they are, you know, at any one point. They need to kind of come up with that ultimate decision.